Hi everyone, we are here with a really exciting couple. You may know them from One Extraordinary Marriage, a podcast that we've been listening to a really long time. I actually realized today, you guys, that your podcast was the first podcast period I ever listened to.
Oh, wow.
So
That's awesome.
I'll give you a second to introduce yourselves. Tell everyone about your podcast, your Instagram, and where to find you, and introduce yourselves a bit.
Yeah, my name is Tony DeLorenzo, and I'm here with my beautiful wife, Elisa. We have the top-rated marriage podcast in iTunes called One Extraordinary Marriage Show.
We've been married for 23 years.
Mm-hmm. Right now. Two kids, teenagers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How's that going?
Well, you know what? People think that the adventure, you know, like once when you have babies, it's like, okay, when they get a little bit older. And the reality is that parenting just looks different. And I don't think you ever actually graduate to the point where you're not like, oh my gosh, at least not while they still live in your
not
house.
Not while they live in your house. Yeah. And so if anybody wants to connect with us and learn more about us, you know, go to your favorite podcast app, search for One Extraordinary Marriage Show. You'll find us. Or if you want, you can find us at oneextraordinarymarriage.com.
Awesome. And you guys cover so many great topics, I think, that sometimes don't get discussed in marriages in general. So kind of the theme that we're looking at is the importance of dates. And you guys have had some really good episodes recently.
We stole this from you. just to kind of elaborate on what Anne just said, I think, because like you said, I found you guys. I mean, it was a few years ago.
Probably 5 or 6 years ago, yeah.
Because I was looking for a podcast to listen to on my commute to work, and I thought, you know, I don't know, we weren't having problems. We never had problems, but I think maybe we were just in one of those bickering phases, and I thought, you know, maybe I should try and find some resources for being a better husband. And then I can't remember what the episode was that I listened to, because I mean, you guys are obviously hundreds of episodes into your show by then, so I don't think I went right back to the beginning, but I started sharing some of the ones that I'd listened to that I thought really kind of spoke to where we were, and got Andrew listening. So I didn't realize it was the first podcast you'd ever listened to.
I didn't know. You had to show me how to play a podcast on my phone. I was like, what do I do?
Yeah, we should have sent you a hug message by now, I guess.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, we found you really helpful. But I think the main thing that I noticed about you guys is just nothing's off limits. And I think from our experience, I mean, we've not been, you know, in this sort of field for a very long time, but I think even just our own observations longer term is that marriage is almost like a really veiled secret. You know, I mean, it's either I talk on here quite a bit about how it's sort of mocked a little bit in
pop culture.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you're supposed to argue, and the husbands are always dumb, and you're not supposed to tell each other the truth. And I think in real life, there's more people are really happy to talk about the negatives and the arguments, and but not talk about really making it successful and the reality of it. And I think that's what I've really spoken about listening to the One Extraordinary Marriage podcast, was there's a reality there that you can really then try and action in your own relationship.
Yeah, completely. And I think some of the perceptions, you know, around marriage and how people joke about it, you know, we get a bit conditioned and kind of accept and laugh along
like
with
it's
that.
A battle.
Yeah. And I think once we started our podcast, and you know, I started noticing that more, there was an instance a few months ago now, Rich sent me flowers, beautiful flowers at work for absolutely no reason other than that he wanted to. And
good
I work
man.
In a mainly male office. And of course it was, oh, what's he done? And all this. And I thought, oh wow, like that's not just something people say in you know, sitcoms. Like they're actually saying that to me. And I took the opportunity to say, nothing. Everything's perfect. He's wonderful. Well, but not perfect, but everything's fantastic. He's wonderful. He just wanted to do something nice for me, give him some credit. So
but it made me realize how low the bar is to, I think probably more so for a husband, the bar feels really low. It's something as simple as sending flowers out, you know, unprompted. Apparently something that 9 out of 10 guys wouldn't do. So I feel like it's really easy to take advantage of where that bar is to, you know, be better really. But I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, I think what you demonstrated there is that when you choose to be intentional about the relationship when you can give flowers for no reason. And I have to think there were a whole bunch of guys, Andrea, in your office that were like, oh, maybe what would happen if I sent flowers for no reason?
Yeah. Oops, I haven't done this.
Yeah, I haven't done that. Well, shoot, now I got to go, like, where's the nearest floral shop? But what you demonstrated there was that intentionality in the marriage relationship matters so, so much. All the sitcoms make fun of it. The movies make fun of it because we get into this place where it's just like, you know what? Yeah, we were so intentional dating, you know, whether you're long distance or in the same place, there's all this intentionality. And then couples get married and they think they can just take their hands off the wheel and have this wildly successful marriage not being intentional. And what you guys just demonstrated with that is, you know, the bar is low, but that means you can shift it so easily if you just choose to be intentional.
Yeah. And we were there. I mean, we've been married 23 years, like Elisa said, and early on in our marriage, yeah, I think we really expected everything to just be easy and go without a hitch. And there would be no real work on either of our parts to make this marriage union work or last. And so us learning that, wow, yeah, when we are intentional and we do take action and we do want to romance each other and we do want to connect with each other through dating or other ways, there's so much that comes out of it.
Yeah, totally. And I think it, you know, what you said there is you kind of think you're going to get married and everything's going to fall into place and you're going to have this effortless relationship. It's actually the complete opposite. Things are so natural when you're first together and things kind of seem like they fall in place then with the chemistry and sex and romance and excitement. And then you actually have to be, you have to be so much more intentional when you are married because things do become or can so easily become routine. And I've kind of said it before. Running a household and having a marriage is almost like running a business, which sounds so unromantic, but it is the reality of it.
Yeah, and you know, the reason we wanted to do this episode with you guys tonight, and you've just immediately struck on two of those reasons, was you said intentionality and life sort of after the wedding vows. And we've spoken about this quite a few times, which is why we really thought it would be on topic to get you guys on here, especially with the four-part dating series you've just done. Because again, going back to sort of pop culture, there's that thing of you get married and you can let yourself go. You know, I've already won the girl. I've already got my man. We can do nothing. And like, you can't take it for granted that it's going to last forever. And the intentionality is something that we really try and talk about quite a lot is. So I suppose that brings us to the first point. Although I just wanted to say for anyone listening to this, obviously your show is One Extraordinary Marriage, but the advice you give and we're going to be talking about tonight isn't strictly only for people who are married. This is
long-term relationship
advice. And
oh, we have people who are dating, engaged, right, married, who listen to us because you can use this. I mean, there are folks that have been divorced, remarried, divorced, you know, and just maybe looking to get remarried. We have single folks who want to get married. So yeah, I mean, we cover the gamut. And so you're all welcome.
You're approaching close to 600 episodes, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're new to Tony and Lisa, there's
you've got a lot of
there's at least one episode that'll be for you. But yeah. So the thing, and Elisa, I was recapping on your dating episodes this morning, and you mentioned in I think episode 3 that you hadn't yet defined what a date is. So. I think it'd be good if we start this episode with that definition. For us, the way we've defined it in our past episode, it was a year ago, I guess, we spoke about
date
ideas for couples. The way we see it is being intentional time together. So again, it's going back to that word of intentionality, but we see that can be as anything as sort of low key as if we say we're going to the mall together, we would, you know, not specifically to buy an item, but we might say we're just going to go there and walk about and hang out and be together. Like, we would consider that a date.
Stuff, we go to the zoo.
We
love the zoo. Doing a puzzle at home together, turning off our electronics and stuff like that. I think it's just anything where there's no one else involved, we shut everything out and it's just us.
Yeah, so.
But it was really interesting.
And that's setting the expectations.
Yeah.
So in anything like this, even around dates, it's setting the expectation of what that means to each of you. because to go to the zoo to me would be boring as all get out. I would not go to the zoo for a date. To me, that is not a date. That's a day of dealing with kids running around. And I don't, that, to me, that's not a date.
But I married Dr. Doolittle, so it is like, yeah. It is his dream come true. And goats right. follow him in the petting zoo. It's his greatest day for him.
Yeah.
Right. But, and that's the beauty in it, because we're all different. Mm-hmm. And yet as a couple, we set those expectations between one another so we understand. Like, I, again, if setting those expectations and you know that going to the zoo brings him joy and even yourself, then it can be a fantastic date for each other.
Yeah.
And yet if you're taking your spouse to the zoo, like, if Elisa were to take me to the zoo, I'd be like, what are we doing here?
We have such a great zoo here in San Diego.
Yeah, we've been to San Diego Zoo. Yeah,
I have
San Diego.
But you did ask the question about how we define dating in that series, and it was rather ironic to me that I waited until the third episode to be able to share that, because defining words is a big part of what we do on the One Extraordinary Marriage show, so that we are all playing with the same definition, that, you know, we're all in the same field. And as we defined it in that show, it was, you know, seeing someone specific with purpose on a regular basis. And so it really dials down into the fact that that time needs to be on purpose. It's not just kind of that, like, you know, well, we happen to both be sitting at the same restaurant together, so let's call that a date. It's like, No, I'm intentionally doing this with you. And then the regular basis part is, you know, we can't just date our spouses or our partners, you know, like once a year and hope that that's going to grow and enrich the relationship. We have to have consistency around that, because there are so many distractions in this world. There are so many, you know, whether it's work or family or kids or volunteering or whatever it might be, that can take us out of that space where we're still investing and growing the relationship. Mm-hmm. So we've got to be consistent. It's not just like letting it go to chance.
Right.
You said, I can't remember what episode it was. I listened to a couple of them today. But one of them you mentioned about you putting your phones in the safe to make sure that it's not a distraction.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a food locker, and Amazon has them, and it has a digital clock on the top of it. And so you set that timer, and when the timer goes off, it releases, and then you can go back into that safe, or it like I said, it's a food locker, I think is what it's called on Amazon.
Yeah.
That's good. 'Cause we, one of the things we do this probably almost once a month now.
Yeah.
And we recommend it. We call it a blackout night. And,
that's awesome.
I got called out on Twitter for it recently, rightly so, I guess, but the way we describe it is that it's a night with no electronics and it's just us. The reason I mentioned that one of our favorite things to do is watch movies at home. So technically the TV is an electronic, but you know, our response to that is that's the intentional bit, is that the date in that instance is we would cuddle up on the sofa and we'd watch a movie together, but the phones, the computers, the tablets, they're in another room.
We even take our Apple Watches off so we don't get notifications.
Anything that can give us a notification is turned off, it's left in another room, and we're just present with each other. And you know, so you without breaking the rules of it, if your intentional time together was playing video games, that's okay. It doesn't have to be anything electronic is locked away, but it's just, what are we going to do tonight that we both agree is going to be a fun time where we're purposefully together? We're really big proponents of that. We went kind of sporadic with how often we do it, and this year it was sort of one of my resolutions to make relationships, both marriage and just more family, a real priority. So we do that once a month, and then we also do what we call favorite night, which I'll let you explain. What was your idea?
So I think I read about it. I think it was during a period of time when, you know, we didn't have a lot of spare money, and I just thought, what can we do to still make things feel a little bit special and not just like a normal night? And I read, I think probably on Pinterest or somewhere, you know, cheap date ideas. And favorite night was essentially where one of you takes charge of preparing a meal and choosing entertainment that you know is something that's your partner's favorite. So that might mean making Mexican food, ordering pizza, you know, whatever it is they like, but then choosing that entertainment, whether it's their favorite board game, card game, favorite, putting on their favorite movie, or, you know, whatever that is. And it's really, it's another tie back to intentionality of thinking about what, you know, they've said recently, you know, how they said, oh, do you know, I've really been craving Chinese food or what, you know, whatever it is. Well, that's
the thing to me, is it goes beyond the intentionality. And I think it makes you feel a bit more special because it shows they really know you. And if it's something like you said, oh, the other day you said you want a Chinese, that shows they're listening and they really, you know, pay attention to what you have to say and what's important to you. And to me, it just feels like it's another tool in the arsenal of it all. But that in particular just feels like it's, we rotate it. So, you know, tomorrow is yours.
Yeah, you get to do it for me.
Yeah. So we rotate it, but it's just a way to make each other feel that way.
Yeah.
Well, I think that brings up a really good point is, and this was something we really discovered when we were doing this series, is that, you know, prior to marriage, in most couples, the man is the one asking the wife out on dates. He's the one planning it. And women are super excited about that. And then there's this shift. And what we found in marriage is that there really needs to be both people taking the lead, right? Like you were just saying around that favorites night, you take turns and you know, if it's the husband who's up for favorites night, he's going to plan all his wife's favorites. If the wife's up for favorites night, she's going to plan all her husband's favorites. But there's that give and take instead of having it be so one-sided, especially after kids come into the picture for a lot of couples. Yeah. It seems like the wife is suddenly the one responsible for, you know, making sure they've got a sitter and figuring out what they're going to do. And yet there's such a depth to the relationship that comes when somebody can just sort of mentally take a night off from making all the decisions and just be loved on and cared for and, you know, not have to answer the question, you know, what do you want to do tonight? I don't know. What do you want? You know, and you have that crazy back and forth, but instead of just say, you know, I love you so much. I'm planning tonight's date. You don't have to think about it. Just enjoy every minute.
Yeah. It's so important. I have a friend who's engaged and they call it meatball night. If you come home and you feel like you just need to be a meatball and lazy and sit there and you take care of dinner, you take care of everything, I just need to be a meatball right now. And it's just so nice to have a, you know, I mean, marriage should be the safest place where you can get what you need and just be and feel how you feel in the moment. And I think having that relief of someone to say, you know, I'm going to take care of this and it's all about you tonight. It is such a relief, you know, life is crazy and busy. And then
what happens if they both want a meatball night?
I guess it's going to be a really unproductive night.
Is it just like Uber Eats in and yeah, you just call it good?
Yeah. And okay. Like probably they have to bring it to your door because then you'd be arguing over who would go down and get it.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, because we have some pets and one of our routines is I feed them in the morning and Andrew feeds them in the evening. Well, on favorite night, so when it's her favorite night, that includes me feeding the animals in the evening too. So she just doesn't have to do anything. So we kind of broaden it out to you come home from work and between when you come home from work and when we go to bed, it's your evening. And originally we started.
You really take advantage of that.
I do. I do.
But he'll do it on the morning of, like, oh, I think I'll buy lunch today. It's my favorite day. This is my favorite day.
Yeah, it's like a birthday to me.
Every day is your favorite day.
But it's I mean it's just are you completely throwing me off my
Sorry.
Story? What was I gonna say? Yeah, so we do it beyond just the actual activity and in our case the food. And we when we started out we would do it as a surprise. We had no idea. You'd know it was gonna be your favorite night, but you wouldn't know what it was gonna consist of. And as we've kind of done more of them, we started to be a bit more. Have you got any requests for tonight? Is there anything in particular you want to eat? And because sometimes you do, you might really fancy that Chinese, but your spouse in all their thoughtfulness knows that your favorite meal is something else and they've made you that, and in the moment it's just not what you want. So we've brought in a little bit more what input do you want to this. But it's, I think what's really good about it, and I think, you know, I know you guys have really really active community, I just think there's so many options. A favorite night can be anything for any different couple. And I think really for us, actually, we took inspiration from your episode too. One of your listeners said about how they do, they took a picture, you were talking about the lighting in this picture, I remember. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like they're eating on the floor.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're borrowing that for Andrea as well, and we're having, she's requested soft tacos.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to eat that. I have like a little, because we love to do picnic. One of our favorites is, what do you call it?
Like a charcuterie board, like a antipasto.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we lock the dogs out of the room, and we have like crackers and salamis and cheese, and we just sort of.
Only because our dogs are really greedy, not because they're not.
Yeah, not because we don't like them. but it's just it's funny. It doesn't take much to break up the routine of eating on a plate in your normal way, just to do something. I think you mentioned this. I think maybe it was you, Tony, that you just said, you know, just changing one. I think you said throw a rug on the floor, and it's changed the dynamic of the room that you're in all the time, and it really can be just the simplest things.
And setting it up so that you and your spouse are doing something you enjoy. And it's why we set up our Date Night Done Right free marriage guide, because we want couples to set those up for themselves. There are so many couples, and we hear it a lot, like, oh my gosh, all the stuff I see on Instagram or Pinterest, like that I would never do that on a date.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why we empower those in the one family to go, hey, Elisa and I are here to get the wheels turning. We do not know every answer. We do not know every date night. I mean, you guys have shared a number of them already today with us that we have never heard of. And it's our goal to just say, here it is. Go talk, connect with one another. Set up the expectations, set up what low-cost date nights would look like for you guys, set up what extravagant dates would look like for you guys. But you do it because it's your marriage. And that's going to change over time from when you're first married, and maybe, you know, you're younger and you don't have a lot of money, to when you're in your 40s and 50s and you've had a great career and your kids are out of the house now. Those are two differently places in marriage, and we have to grow through those. I mean, Elisa and I shared, heck, our date nights when we were younger newlyweds was we went to a pizza place up in La Quinta, California, because we lived down in the desert by Palm Springs in that area. And that's where we would go on a Friday night. And that's what we considered a date night, because I think we'd buy a pizza for maybe 10 bucks back in the day. And we were like, got us out of the house and we were good. And yet when the kids were younger, we couldn't get out of the house. We couldn't afford a babysitter at the time. So we made sure that we'd get the kids to bed, and then we'd have picnic on the floor.
Yeah.
And that's how we did dates. And now it's completely different because our kids are older, and Elisa and I love just walking our city and different parts of our city. So we love to just walk and go grab a little bite somewhere and go do some more walking. And it's changed in 23 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. And you guys have got such a nice area to explore too, so that definitely helps.
Well,
definitely helps
on a walk.
We did that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. We have good. Because when we walk the dogs, it's just our time to like
talk.
Yeah, we talk. I think the walking just kind of.
It's kind of when we do our dreaming, sort of, really, and our planning. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so we're an international couple, so like we talk about. We obviously used to talk about moving and closing the distance, and now we talk about, you know, what's our future going to be? Is it going to be here or California or somewhere else or whatever? And, you know, so yeah, walking's just a great time to, I know you guys talk about it a lot, and we thoroughly recommend it to people. If you can walk together, then do. It's just such a different, we have very different conversations, I think, at home. Like you said before, like, you know, where it can be like a business.
Yeah.
We have those business conversations at home, or we watch TV or on our phones. And when we're on a walk, we're much more, was back to intentional again. Mm. Yeah, we're not on the phone, we're not distracted. The only distraction is whether the dog needs to go.
Yeah, then we argue about who picks it up.
But, so I think walking's a really great recommendation. And one of the other things you mentioned in your episodes was, and I realized how guilty we are of this, that so many people's dates revolve around food and films.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you asked your audience their ideas, and I thought maybe we can talk about some of those. But you also mentioned, while we're on the topic of sort of doing some of this for cheap or for free, you threw out a number, and I think it was somewhere around up to $2,000 a year that are spent on dates. And it got me wondering a question for you of would you basically where do you think that money is best spent? Do you think people should be spending that month to month building that momentum and that routine and connecting regularly, or is it occasionally good to say we spend around $2,000 a year, 1 year should we save that and do one romantic getaway trip that builds, you know, lifelong memories? What would you think?
Ooh, that's
I wish you could see Tony's head right now, because as soon as you said save up and do one big thing, he just started shaking his head. And
yeah.
Do you want to say why?
No.
Okay. I think a lot of couples, I would say, and I don't use this word very often, but I think most couples or all couples actually need to have dating be a regular part of their relationship in order to maintain and create longevity in the relationship. I think, you know, if you want to do those big epic trips, start saving for them, right? Mm-hmm. If it's not in your budget now, start putting the money away. There's something exciting about building toward, you know, an adventure or, you know, the hotel that you've always wanted to stay at or something like that. And then you get on the same page and like, how can we save money every month to make this happen? Or how can we make more money? But couples need connection away from distraction. And if that's like, if you're only looking at it and, you know, if it's January and you're like, our epic trip, our big date this year is going to be in December, you've got a lot of days where you're just going to be going through the motions. But if you know you've got date night, like you guys were saying, tomorrow night, and you're like, sweet, I got something to look forward to. It's going to be my favorites night. This is going to happen. I know where you have that anticipation on a regular basis. And that anticipation is where it really fosters the connection between, you know, between the two of you. So,
and here's the thing, if that's your budget, you're setting for your dates for the year and you're working out how that happens, you may look at it and go, again, everybody's different and in different parts of their lives and in their marriage and where they're headed. So one couple may be like, hey, you know what? We want to take 1500 of that and we do want to do a big weekend, but we're going to take 500 and that's going to be the money we're going to use for maybe once a month we're going to do something. Mm-hmm. And with that $500, we're going to have to stretch it. So maybe we don't go to, you know, $100 dinner and spend another $50 at the movie every time we go out. Maybe we're going to have to do something that's just more like we're going to go to do some games in the park, or we're going to go get that board game that only costs us $25, but we can play it multiple times in different ways. Maybe we'll go search out in our city or our town during the summer months. What are the free concerts? What are the free plays that are going on? What are some of those deals that we can get, so we don't blow all $500 and then hold the $1,500 for a bigger trip? Others may just go, you know what? We're going to just splurge every month and we're going to just put a set price every month and that's what we're going to spend. To each his own. Again, what works for you in this season that you're in is what's going to be best for the two of you.
And I think one thing that you touched on there that is so important, and I was listening this morning to, I think it was the episode 2 of the series, Getting Creative with the Ideas. And if it's kind of a good way to give yourself a challenge. I think some people who maybe have access to, you know, extra income to put towards dates, maybe do get in the habit potentially of, oh, well, we can do this. We can go to the nice dinner. We can go to, you know, the movies, or if you live in a big city, maybe the theater. But just giving yourself a reason, whether it's budget related or not, to, you know, have the challenge of finding something alternative, something different, something you don't always do, so that it doesn't get kind of stagnant. You know, anything you can do to motivate that is really helpful.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, going back to your point, Tony, about maybe you take a smaller amount of money and you make it stretch, is something I always struggled with, and in turn, Andrea struggled with. My struggle was, I can be really imaginative if I've got money to play with. Mm-hmm. You know, I can say, oh, I'm going to buy you this, or I'll plan this. Because she's incredible at guessing. I've never known anyone like it. So I just have to start lying about what's happening. And then surprise her. Otherwise she goes, oh, it's that, isn't it? I'm like, how did you know that? I spent a lot of money on that present.
It's the point where like Christmas presents don't go down until right before I'm going to open them. Because even if I don't pick them up, I just see the box. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. It's wrapped under the tree. And she goes, wow. Oh, yeah. Not this. So
useless gift.
So I've had to really get to grips with that. But so if I've got the money, I can I can be quite creative and romantic and everything, but when I haven't got the money, you know, I suppose a lot of our listeners know that when we were in the early stages of our marriage, I was working freelance, so money was kind of feast or famine for me. And when it was feast, it was great, and when it was famine, it was okay, I've got no ideas of how to be romantic. And you used to say to me, like, I need you to be more romantic. It hasn't got to be anything extravagant or expensive. And in my mind, I knew that. So I know it doesn't need to be a lot of money, but I don't know what to do. So I think being forced to, like you said, Tony, if you can say, right, this amount of money is what we're going to spend over the next X number of months, it can be fun in its own way of kind of learning what works. So for us, I mean, I'm quite lucky. You're quite easy to please on a budget. Like, you know, it can be cheap food, but we love to just get a two-player video game. And we can lose hours doing that together, you know. Yeah. And podcasts, watching stuff on YouTube. Like, I think nowadays with so much free entertainment straight to our living room and stuff, it's the night we discovered Pinterest was what, like 3-4 hours of wetting ourselves laughing. Have you seen this picture? Oh my god, have you seen that picture?
Oh my god.
And so it doesn't have to, but so that, and that's something I've got better with, I think, over the years. But and obviously, you know, like you said, as you kind of get older, your financial situation hopefully stabilizes a bit and everything, and that's helped. But I think it's a fun challenge in its own right to try and figure out what you can do for less money for your other half.
Well, and for us, even as we've gotten older and we do the walk and talks, which we love, to me, that is dating Elisa. Mm-hmm. We get up on a Saturday morning, we drive to the beach here, to Torrey Pines, which is in Del Mar. We'll stop at the coffee shop. Elisa gets her coffee. I don't drink coffee or espresso anymore. She does still. Mm-hmm. So we stop there. She gets her drink. We get out on the beach and we walk.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, it's part of our dating life. To us, we've set the expectation that it doesn't have to be dinner in a movie to be considered a date. For us, it's, man, we're out. We're in nature. We love that. We love the sand and the beach and looking at the surfers. So every week we're on a date and it's cheap. It's $5 unless we go to breakfast and then it's 20.
But I think a big part of that too is, you know, couples need to actually have the conversation on, you know, being intentional about those low cost or no cost dates, like to actually take the time and say, you know what, let's just sit down and brainstorm. Let's, you know, set a timer for 10 minutes. And this is part of the Date Night Done Right guide where you can do this, where you can just say, you know what, put $20, like we're going to come up with date ideas that, you know, cost $20 or less. And then you brainstorm around that. And then you've got a list. And so you're not sitting there going, oh my gosh, we only have $20. What are we going to do for a date? You're like, no, we could, you know, just take a walk and, you know, go grab an ice cream. We could, you know, order a pizza and do pizza on the deck tonight. We could watch the stars and have a glass of wine. You know, there are all these different things that you could do, but you have to be, and this goes back to, you know, how we started the show, you have to be intentional about putting that list together. Otherwise you find yourselves in a place of almost feeling anxious of, oh my gosh, this is all we have, or oh my gosh, it's date night, like what are we going to do? But if you're intentional about saying, hey, we've got all these ideas, I'm just going to pick one, then it's kind of like having your favorites night where somebody's just taking the lead on that, but you've got this list of ideas that you know are already great ideas because the two of you brainstormed them, and then you're like, I'm just going to run with this. We're going to go play miniature golf. We're going to, you know, camp in the backyard. We're going to, you know, whatever that might be.
Yeah, one of the things we've got in our living room, I think you'll like this. We need to use it more. I think we can put more in it. But we have, it's just a little glass pot that you got for like no money at a cheap store, didn't you? And we just sat down one night and we wrote down, I think we each came up with a list of 10 or so things. And it was a varied, it could be something sexual. It could be something like, I think one of yours was hold my hand in public, wasn't it? And so but it's really anything that is important to us. But it could certainly expand out to include dates and all that kind of stuff. But what we did is we would cut out each one of those things and we'd scrunch it up, and it's just in that pot. And then the idea of it was, whenever we felt like it, one of us would walk past, take something out, and that's what we would do. Or, you know, if the other person wasn't in the mood for that particular thing, then that was okay. We talk about it. But it just sort of sparked a bit more spontaneity. And like you said, the other person put in what they want more of. So it's a way of getting that without it being strictly asked for and you feeling like you're obligated to do it.
Or... And it also brings the conversation of like, oh, I had no idea you value that particular thing so much. That's so easy. I can do that. Or
but it just felt like less... I think anything's easier to implement if it feels like it's not a huge amount of work. And I think if you have a serious conversation, yeah. I need more of this from you, and then you think, okay, when am I going to do that? That's something else to add to my list. Your intention's there, but I think it's easy not to do it. And I think on the other hand, if you walk past this part, you're in the room, you pick it up, and it's, I want whatever it might be.
One of them was... like rainy day hot chocolate and marshmallows.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Just
so,
stuff like that.
And it rains a lot here in England, so that, that's...
Yeah.
So it's just something like that. It's like, oh, you know what? I can make hot chocolate and get marshmallows.
You can do that every other day, basically.
Yeah,
here.
So it kind of works as a date without it being necessarily as formal or even called a date, but it's just, I think just in the bringing it back to the topic of this conversation is you can easily include dates in there, like, you know, your sub $20 ideas can easily go in that jar to be picked out.
And what would that look like? It's interesting because you brought that up. And what would that look like from a standpoint? Now, we haven't done this, but maybe for some couples, it's the planning of it really stresses them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so having to think through everything prior really sort of puts a kibosh to it. But what would happen if you had sort of a subject of, hey, here are, you know, our $10 or less date night ideas or date ideas. We put them in a jar and we each come up with five. So we have a total of 10. We mix them all together. Mm-hmm. And then whoever's turn it is, they just put their hand in and they pull it out. They have a 50-50 chance of pulling their own or their spouse. But then it's on them to just go, okay, I got to make this happen in the next 2 hours or whatever it may be, or half a day or whatever you guys determine. But then it's not so much of like, I got to get in my head and I got to think about it. It's just like, here's the pot, grab the ticket. It's your turn this week. There it is. Make it happen under 10 bucks. We've already put it in there. Let's go.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Alyssa touched on this as well with when you've done it together, you know, it's kind of you kind of know what you're planning with each other. So when you do pick it out, it's not going to be a surprise. And maybe the seed was planted when you were writing out your ideas. So maybe you've had time for that to kind of ruminate. Okay, I kind of have an idea of what I'm going to do.
You could
with
even
this.
Approve together. You can say, here's our combined 10 ideas. Should we go through them? Make sure we're both happy with what's on here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no nasty surprises or whatever. And well, you know, but on the topic of money, I was really pleased to hear you mention it, Tony, in, again, it was episode 3 or 4. You said about including this in a budget. So we're big fans of just kind of knowing where your money's going and basically allocating if something's important to you, there's X amount of money for it. And we have discussed previously that we would earmark a relatively small amount of money every month, just so that's money for dating. It could be going out for a meal, maybe we'd save up 2 months and do something bigger, but you know, it's there. And you made the point that it's so important that even if you're paying off debt, you're aware of couples who've spent a long time clearing all their debt, and then at the end of it they've kind of neglected their relationship and they're in a difficult position. But even if you're clearing debt, you can save a little bit of money to say that much of money is just for us to be on a date. I mean, can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think it's vitally important. And Elise and I, we got ourselves out of $50,000 in debt, and that included car loans. So we sold some cars and all of that sort of thing.
Well done.
Yeah. So, and that was prior to kids. It was one of those things where we're about to have our oldest. Not about, but we were planning on getting pregnant and having a kid. And I remember just looking at that debt going, we need to take care of this. And we started it, got pregnant. And I think we finished it right before or right after. I can't remember.
I think it was like the month before he was born.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking 17 years ago now. And I just remember really focusing in on it so much that we lost sight of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't go on many dates. I mean, we were of the rice and beans and that's all you eat. And I feel like in that time, we probably needed to spend a little bit more time together. We did get away. I remember on our anniversary trip, mm-hmm. we did take an anniversary trip, but that was probably the only big thing we did. And since then, I've seen many, many of friends and other folks, they get on it because they want to get out of debt, and yet they neglect the relationship. And so what ends up happening, they're a year into this, or they're 2 years into this, and their spouse is just like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Like, if all we're doing is trying to get out of debt and we're not even enjoying ourselves at any point, what's the purpose? And I've seen spouses get pretty upset at one another. And I just felt like one of my buddies, I remember just talking to him, just going, you know what? I know you're going through this. While you're setting up your cash flow plan, put $20 in it for you and her. Just spend $20 this month and go do something together. And he and I had a little heart to heart. He's like, oh, but that's $20 that could go here and this. And I said, yeah. I go, but at the end of the day, dude, loving on your wife will last and will be way more worth than that $20 towards your debt. Mm-hmm. And yeah. He did it. They got out of debt together. And you could sense that there was more ease upon them. They felt like, and she did too, that they were working together, and yet he wasn't neglecting her in that. She needed to know that he still loved her and cherished her and wanted to be doing things with her. And so even that small amount for them allowed her to know that she was still important, even as they were going through their debt snowball and getting out of debt.
Yeah, I mean, it's an investment. You have to view it as an investment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was just gonna say, you know, I'm thinking about the $20, and you know, so often, like Tony and I will share a meal, or we'll share, you know, a iced tea or a drink. Like, I mean, if you figure out, like, the average coffee nowadays, I think is probably like $5. I mean, if you guys shared a coffee, you could actually go and have a conversation away or talk. You could do that 4 times in a month if your budget was $20 and you were just getting one coffee and sharing it.
Yeah.
But in, you know, that could be once a week, and you just, like, I know there is one couple in the one family that money is tight for them. And yet I see once a week, they're sitting in Starbucks, having that connection, that time together. Mm-hmm. And like, we're hearing the stories of the success in their relationship, because while they may not have a lot of money, they realize that the time that they spend together, just disconnecting from the rest of the world and connecting to one another, it allows them to have the strength to carry on, to work the double shifts, to, you know, put in the long hours, because they know at the end of the day, the other person is there for them and has their back.
And just kind of going down that path a little bit more, I mean, you know, we're all kind of, I think most people can agree that dates are important, and maybe there's some skeptics who think, oh, we're married, it's fine, we don't, you know. Yeah. But what are kind of the potential consequences or dangers, I don't know if danger is the right word, but of a dateless marriage? What can that look like, and what do you guys think that can do to couples?
A dateless marriage. So basically what you're saying there, if I'm understanding correctly, is there's a couple is not being intentional about spending time together. Is that what we're essentially. So if you're not spending time with someone, the relationship, like intentional time, the relationship will fall apart. I can almost guarantee that a couple that chooses not to date over an extended period of time will end up divorced. Because it's very hard to know who your spouse is and who they've become. Because, like, Tony and I have been married 23 years. When we got married, we were 22 and 23. If we did not date each other, if we weren't intentional about the time over the last 23 years, and I was still treating him like the 23-year-old young man that he was when he's now 46, like that's not fair. I wouldn't know him. I wouldn't know what his fears are. I wouldn't know what his goals are, what his dreams are, what his desires. Like, we get in marriage, it's so easy to lapse into this place of just, you know, talking on the surface and just going through almost survival. Like, what do we need to get through the day? What bills do we need to pay? Where do we need to be? Who needs to do what? And we become very transactional. Dating is what brings the depth of the relationship. And so if you choose not to date, you're choosing not to create opportunities to go deeper with your spouse and know who they are now and what's happening in their world now.
I think that's a really important point. We're 9 years married this year, so we're around about 10 years.
Nice.
In person. And it, but just in that space of time, we've both changed significantly. And, you know,
yeah.
We just had, it was Valentine's, obviously, and one of the things Andrea wrote in my card was that she's enjoyed sort of watching me grow as a husband and as a person. And you kind of, I think it's easy to lose sight of where you've changed yourself. But when you look back, I think actually, like, I was the very end of being 24 when I got married. And so, like you just said, Lisa, like that time of your life, you're very different to just being early 30s and then, you know, 40s and whatever. Like, you change significantly. And one of the episodes we have is where we try and make the distinction of couples who are growing apart and just growing individually, and maybe they're not on the same path. And I think broadly the point we made was kind of what you've just said, that you may just not have been connected enough to know that you're always going to be on this path of growth and development. And if you're not checking in, how do you know where you're each going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you live in, I think what ends up happening is there's no excitement that's happening in the marriage. And we've seen it before, and I think you guys probably have as well. Somebody comes along and it's like, oh, hey, you want to go to lunch? Hey, you want to go to coffee? Hey, you want to go do this? And before you know it, what you should be doing together, somebody else is getting in, and now an emotional affair can happen, a physical affair can happen. And so why would you want to go down that path?
Yeah, I think emotional affair as a topic, I think, is a really important, because in a way it can be more, I mean, as far as I'm aware, it's not something we've experienced. No. But I think just through observation and thinking about it, there's probably a more insidious nature to an emotional affair, because I guess by its nature it has to grow over a bit more time. You know, you can't have a one night stand emotional affair, and you equally have to be intentional when allowing that person to keep coming into your life, knowing that those feelings are starting to be there, starting to develop, continuing to see that person. To me, it feels, saying it all out loud, maybe significantly so, but I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. It just feels maybe overlooked. People don't talk about emotional affairs as much as they do physical affairs. I think maybe there's a bit of a disconnect about how insidious they can be.
Mm-hmm. I would agree 100%. An emotional affair, I mean, I've worked and coached couples for years now. And in a lot of respects, the emotional aspect of an affair, if it's strictly an emotional affair, you have that. But if you have a physical affair, the emotional aspect of that for the spouse whose trust has been broken is actually the hardest part, because there is that betrayal of all of that time. Like you said, I mean, you were sharing your feelings and you were spending time and you were having these conversations and you were telling them what was going on inside of you, and you wouldn't tell me what that was. And so the destruction and the collateral damage that comes as a result of sharing your emotions with someone that isn't your spouse.
Yeah,
I mean, because the one thing you always hear when someone has a physical affair, they always say, it didn't mean anything. And I think it's kind of just literally occurred to me this minute, is you can't say that with an emotional affair. The whole purpose of that is it did mean something. Like, you were giving and receiving something that you weren't giving and receiving in your committed relationship.
And yeah. I can see how, even, you know, aside from, you know, the kind of affair, whether emotional or physical, that aspect, not dedicating that time to one another and feeling so out of touch over a long period of time, you know, it's easy to see how detrimental that could be. I mean, we're really committed to intentional time, whether it's, I think maybe some of our intentional time maybe doesn't even qualify as a date, but it's us connecting and it's us communicating.
We can just like to be goofy together.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, together. But we had a period of like 2 or 3 weeks where, you know, Rich had been traveling for work. My job's been insane. I had like social engagements with work friends outside. We were both doing tons of content for the podcast and website. And I suddenly realized it had been about 3 weeks since we just had like an evening where there wasn't any of this outside stuff. And I was realizing how that was affecting me. And I was feeling really, really sad. Like, I just didn't know what was going on with him, even though we were completely happy, getting along, you know, just, but doing things together, but separate kind of. And I just said, like,
we're like ships in the night.
I felt like that. I was like, this needs to stop. I know it's only been 3 weeks and this might seem dramatic, but this is not working for me. I don't want this to become our reality. We need to come to a plan for how this doesn't take over. And we did.
But as a side point to that, as a spouse, that's a really nice thing to hear, because you're hearing that you're still important to that person. And you know, I always say that it's someone wanting to be with you is a real privilege, and I really think that's something that people don't maybe acknowledge or say enough, is like, someone wants me to be a permanent part of their life, and in our case, you know, share our home and build a life together. I think that's a tremendous privilege in its own right. And for someone to sit there and say, I'm not seeing enough time of you, when we spend all of our time at work with people that we're thrown together with, and they mean varying degrees to us, you know, but these are people that you spend a lot of time with. They can really annoy you. They're the ones that cause a lot of stress during the day. For someone to say, I enjoy your company and I want more of it, like, that's a really nice thing to hear.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, Rich, one of the things that I'm taking away from that conversation, and just to point out to the listeners, is that you were receptive to hearing that.
Yeah, I think we didn't have a lot planned, but I think we just said, okay, let's make sure nothing happens on Friday and it's just us. And we did essentially like a mini favorites night, and not a favorite night, but just kind of a home date
night. And I think you touch on really something really important there, Elise, and that's that even in marriage, you can still feel sometimes saying something like that a little bit vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you guys have been married 20 plus years. We're coming up on a decade. And
I could have said no.
There could have been a part of you saying, no, everything's fine. And I think, even though I wasn't afraid to vocalize that, we're not really afraid to say anything in our marriage. but there was a part of me thought, oh, gosh, you know, I hope he thinks the same thing, and this isn't a discussion.
Yeah, if I said, I'm saying enough of you.
I need less time. yeah. You know, but there's always that chance. And like you said, you know, he was receptive and thankfully on the same page of, yeah, you know, it's been a little bit too crazy lately. But what, in terms of couples who maybe are on a slightly different page on that, do you have any kind of advice for how to maybe either be more receptive if you're the one who doesn't really feel there's a problem, and how to maybe not feel too hurt if you're the one that feels that there is a bit of a problem in terms of that time?
Well, I would say if you're the one that doesn't think there's a problem, if your spouse is bringing it up, we've often said this on our show, it's kind of like the check engine light in your car. If your spouse is sensing something, it's probably a good idea to not ignore that warning light in your marriage. Anytime your spouse says something like, I don't feel connected to you, you may, it could just be that you're in a really busy season, you know, like here in the States, we're getting ready for tax season, right? April 15th is our tax deadline. And we know we've got tons of accountants and bookkeepers who are like, you know, nose to the stone. They're like, they just got to go for the next 6 weeks. And their marriages, like, they know it, they've worked through that type of thing, but that's a disconnect. And so, you know, what we tell people is, if your spouse is saying that, don't dismiss them, right? Give it a conversation, go for a walk and talk, look at what all of the moving pieces are, because your check engine light just went on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ignore it in your marriage, it's going to result in like an engine seizing, right? Like, it could be nothing, or it could be a sign of something really big, and you don't want to run the risk that it's the really something big. So you need to take that. If you're the one that's bringing that up, you know, one of the things that we often talk about on the show is tone and timing really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yes.
So like, don't bombard them when they walk in the door after a hard day at work and be like, oh my gosh, like, we're really disconnected. And you're like in this emotional panic state. And they're like, I just dealt with a whole bunch of, you know, like, crazy, insane meetings all day. I need to breathe. And don't do it right before you go to bed. You know, those types of things.
Yeah, we learned that, the tone and timing, we learned that the hard way over time.
I have to say, I've learned that one of the best times to communicate your needs is right before sex, because everyone is in a really good place. You're really receptive to one another and one another's needs, and you're excited because something really fun's about to happen. Mm-hmm. And not maybe for a heavy conversation, but just
as long as it's not manipulative.
Yeah, no, but just
You're not saying use sex as a weapon.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, you can't. No, just kidding. But no, it's more of a, and this isn't a time for, I wouldn't say the heavy conversations, but hey, you know, I really would like it if we did more of this, or I was thinking, you know, maybe we could make an effort more with this. And you're in a positive place. You're more likely to be receptive to it. And then you get to go off and do something nice together between the sheets, which, again, not for the heavy, difficult conversations, but just hey, you know, I kind of need this right now.
But do you know what? Like, one of the things, this isn't strictly to do with what you just said, I meant to say it and I forgot. But one of the things I really like is, we noticed this anyway before you guys mentioned it on one of your episodes, but if you look through your Instagram feed, there's not really any pictures of you. And we noticed that. And then you mentioned on a recent episode that because when you're having time together, you're having actual time together. And I could really maybe stop and think, like, it really made me think, like, that's what we need to be doing. You know, and we don't take a lot either, really. I think you're a bit of a selfie fan, like, but
we don't really do much.
But we don't normally, if we're together, we are together, and I think a lot of couples really could learn from that.
Yeah.
The reason we do that too is, here's from just my heart when it comes to that, is One Extraordinary Marriage is about you guys. It's Elise and I have the voice and we can speak on it and around marriage, and yet it's about you guys. And so if we post a bunch of pictures of our dates and what we're doing, then I really believe it shuts down your creativity. Yeah. And I don't want to shut down your creativity. I don't want to shut down what you guys could do that's going to be extraordinary in your marriage. Because it's not about Elisa and I. It's about you guys and the one family, and going, you know what? Tony and Elisa talked about this. Well, we wouldn't do it like that because that's what they do. And yet we're going to do it like this and make it our own. And that's what really, for me, is important. Because run with it.
Yeah, and you want to actually be spending time together, not paying lip service to spending time together for your Instagram feed and that
exactly.
Social media moment. But go ahead.
No, I was just also going to say, it also just gets away from comparison. You know, whether you're looking at media or you're looking at movies or whatever, live your own marriage, do your own dates, date your spouse the way it works for the two of you, because you're a unique couple. You don't have to be Instagram perfect for anyone else.
Yeah.
100%.
So, I think we've come to the end of our time with you, but thank you so much for joining us. It's really weird talking to you because we spent years listening to the same voices on our radio.
This is the first podcast I ever heard. Now I have my own and they're on it. Like, this world.
Yes.
Nice.
It's weird. How awesome is that?
When we're in San Diego, we're going to tap you up.
Yes, I have family in San Diego, so we'll be in touch next time when maybe they're visiting.
But before
we'll go down to Torrey Pines. We'll do a walk and talk. Take you to our favorite breakfast spot.
Before we let you go, is there anything you guys want to plug? Oh, we were going to mention, you've got your 30 Days of Sex Challenge coming up, and we are taking part of it. And the day this goes live on Sunday is our first day.
Oh, perfect.
Challenge. So is this is your chance to sort of just quickly tell everyone listening to this what you've got going on.
I would say, in all honesty, find the podcast in your favorite podcast app, jump in, you'll hear what's going on, and go from there. I mean, we have so many different books and resources and events and other things going on. Whenever you jump in, know that we have something for you, and we're here because we want to see you have the extraordinary marriage.
Yeah, you really do have a lot. That you've genuinely got a resource for, like, everything. Very busy people.
When you do this for 10 years, you learn. And
yeah, we want to grow up to be like you guys.
Yeah.
Awesome. We love it.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have an awesome day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.